Welcome to Compressed.fm, a podcast all about web design and development with a little bit of zest. In this episode, we're going to be talking all about TypeScript, what it is and why you might want to use it and how to get started with it. My name is Amy Dutton, and I'm a UI UX designer and front-end developer.
What's up, everyone? My name is James Q. Quick, and I'm a JavaScript developer, speaker, and teacher.
Web development and design, who would have guessed? Well, we can do them both, even add a little zest. So turn up the volume, get ready for the best. Let's get it started in this episode of Compressed.
Today, we're joined by three fabulous sponsors. Vercel will meet all of your hosting needs. Zeal is a software consultancy, and they are hiring. Dado CMS is a performant headless CMS, and more from each of these later in the show. James, what have you been up to?
Well, I just got back yesterday afternoon from my first in-person conference in over a year and a half. A lot of people don't really get into the speaker circuit. It's actually a relatively small group of people that speak at conferences and then travel to speak at conferences. But being in DevRel, that's a huge part of what we do and what the expectation was. So when I joined Auth0 in January 2020, I did one trip and did two conferences in that trip and then didn't travel after that for a conference. I've done so many virtual things. I had been super burnout on virtual talks. People would ask me to give a virtual talk, and I'm like, I'm just really not that interested because it's not like really rewarding. Like the rewarding part is seeing people's reaction, having those interactions, like hanging out with them in between talks and the quote unquote hallway track and going out to a bar to dinner, like having those interactions outside of a formal environment makes such a big difference. I could probably talk about this for like the entire episode, but it was just such a good experience to meet so many people that I had followed and respected and looked up to on Twitter for a while and just see people in person. It was really, really special.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What about you? What have you been up to?
I was just going to add, it's been about the same amount of time since I've been to a conference. Last conference I went to was November of 2019.
Nice. Which conference was that?
It was actually the No Code Conf in San Francisco.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Nice. I bet that would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
It was fun. And it was funny being there working at a software consultancy because some people are like, ooh, why are you here? Mm-hmm. Because you develop software and this is no code. But I think for a lot of people, it's understanding there's a place for both. We actually had a episode on no code. So I'll include a link to that in the show notes. So let's see. This week I worked on a Svelte course landing page. So there's a little leak right there.
Just a subtle one.
Oh man, I just been digging into Svelte and absolutely loving it. I've been bitten by the Svelte bug. Been working on a demo for that and went all in on a Svelte course landing page. And it is 90s themed, which, man, I just really loved, mostly because that was my childhood. And yeah, looking at the old 90s tech stuff with a Game Boy and the 4:3 aspect ratio TV and VHSs. I don't know. There's just some part of me that feels really nostalgic towards all that stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love my iPhone and my wireless everything, but I do miss what seemed like a simpler time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was born in the 90s, born in 91. So in college, we had 90s themed night in our dorms and stuff. Every time I get into like a 90s environment, it's some of the most fun I ever have.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into it. So James, you want to tell us, what is TypeScript?
What is TypeScript? Well, TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. And what that means, the first thing that's really important about this is you can write any valid JavaScript inside of TypeScript. So that's the first thing that people should know, especially in terms of adoption, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And TypeScript, I think technically it transpiles into vanilla regular JavaScript. So what it does is it gives you strong typing is the big thing that TypeScript gives you. So if you've ever written JavaScript and you create a string and then you change it to a number, you can do that because JavaScript lets you do basically whatever you want. But TypeScript adds on top of JavaScript strong typings to be more familiar to people who maybe have object-oriented programming background in C Sharp or Java or things like that. And then it takes that, and at build time, it will transpile, I think, again, is the technical term, to vanilla JavaScript. And then it's just regular JavaScript that runs in the browser. And that's because TypeScript doesn't run in the browser directly. The browsers don't know how to work with TypeScript. They know how to work with JavaScript so that TypeScript gets compiled or transpiled down to regular JavaScript.
That's right. I just want people to know that it's not like an additional language that you have to learn. It's just basically giving JavaScript superpowers. So whether you're already using React or Svelte or Vue or Angular,
Angular didn't roll off. Which one? Is that a new framework that I haven't heard of?
React, Svelte, Vue, or Angular, you can use TypeScript. Angular actually comes with TypeScript by default. And Microsoft is behind TypeScript. And just for comparison, Facebook has its own typing type language or superset called flow. And just to give you an idea, as we're talking about types, what that means is you can have, say, a number 42. And I would just tell you it's a number 42. So 42 plus 42 is 84. But if you put 42 in quotes, it becomes a string. So if you say 42 plus 42, both in strings, you get 4,242 because you're cramming two strings together. So it's a little bit different, whereas if you were using TypeScript, it would catch that error. I think that that's one of the big benefits of using TypeScript is that it will find those bugs for you.
Yeah, and you can define in your functions, for example, you can define what types your parameters will be. Will they be numbers, strings, arrays, so on? You can also define the return type. So if you define the return type to be a string and you call that function and you try to assign it to a variable that's a number, for example, it's not going to let you do that because it knows that the thing that gets returned from that function based on the TypeScript definition should be a string. And one of the things I wanted to add on the Angular side, I would say for me, TypeScript really gained a lot of traction because of TypeScript coming default with Angular. I know like Angular is not necessarily the hottest framework, although it is incredibly popular as well. I think it's more common in bigger enterprise companies, which kind of makes sense. But I think because it was a default there and more people got exposed to it, every day there's some new convert to TypeScript. And we'll try to keep like an unbiased representation of TypeScript and our experiences and stuff. But every day there's some new person on Twitter or blog post that said, I use TypeScript and now I'm in love. And I think other people on podcasts and videos like started out and they're like, TypeScript seems nice occasionally. And then months later, they're like, yeah, I use TypeScript with everything. So it's kind of cool to see that evolution of it's a little bumpy, little rocky, little uncomfortable to get started. But after you do and you really buy into it, I think a lot of people see the benefits and then stick with it after they've used it for a while.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, the biggest thing is just the auto completion that it offers. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, but also just the bug catching. Like it's crazy how many bugs it catches. Just when I hit save, I haven't even gone over to the browser. It already knows you did something wrong.
Yeah, and that's a good distinction as well, as that stuff would be at build time instead of runtime. And a little tiny anecdote for me is I had Java experience and then C# experience, both strongly typed object-oriented languages. And I had been like thinking about trying out JavaScript, but I was so scared because I was like, JavaScript is this free-for-all world where you can literally do whatever you want. JavaScript doesn't care until it blows up and you don't know why. So I was actually really intimidated by the idea of JavaScript because it didn't have almost like those bumper lanes at a bowling alley. Like it didn't have the structure to keep you in place. So this actually is a great solution to that, of giving you that structure that you might be used to or looking for coming from a different type of language.
I think for me, TypeScript intimidated me for the opposite reason. I was so used to being
too much structure.
Free flow, yeah, whatever I want, and then having to reel that in.
What Amy's saying is she's a hippie.
yes, probably the exact opposite. Let me take a brief moment and talk about the company that I work for, Zeal. They actually sponsor our podcast. They design custom applications and develop primarily in Rails and React. They're a remote-first company. Even before the pandemic, they're based out of Southern Oregon, but I live outside of Nashville, and we have team members across the entire country. But Zeal holds a special place in my heart because, as I mentioned, I work there. But I can honestly say it's the best place that I've ever worked. And good news for you, they are hiring, so you could work with me. At Zeal, one of our core principles is bridge the gap. So we've noticed there's a gap in the industry between juniors and seniors. So we want to help juniors level up and achieve that next level within their career path. So with that in mind, I'm going to highlight a particular job that we're hiring for right now, and I'm super stoked about this. It's called the Software Residency, and this position is specifically for that junior designer or developer that wants to be mentored and level up and eventually become a senior. So this position is all about becoming that unicorn, for lack of a better word, but it's that person that can do UI, UX, and development. So similar to a medical residency, you'll be partnered actually with me and we'll work together on projects. We'll also be partnering with Learn, which is a coding bootcamp, and they'll provide career growth and professional development through one-on-one coaching. So I think the whole setup is pretty unique. You can find more information on the website, softwareresidency.com. And of course, I'll include a link within the show notes. Special thanks to Zeal for being a Compressed.fm sponsor. Okay, so one of the things I wanted to reference is, like, in the JavaScript world, Kent C. Dodds is known for testing. He has a course called testingjavascript.com. It's really good. He paired with the folks over at Egghead. But in his course, he actually references this testing trophy. And so if you're a newsletter subscriber, I'll include a picture so you can see exactly what we're talking about. But he basically lays out the pyramid, but it's in the shape of a trophy instead, just how tests are built on top of each other and where you should spend the majority of your time with testing. And so at the base level, the foundational level, he has static tests, which catch typos and type errors as you write code. So that's basically where TypeScript fits into this testing pyramid or testing trophy, because it will catch things for you, as we were talking about, before you even build or render your code. And without having to write any tests at all, it catches bugs, which is very powerful.
Yeah. And for reference for people, the other items that are on here in the testing trophy are, there's static, which you just mentioned, there's unit testing, integration testing, and end-to-end testing. And typically this is in the form of a pyramid with unit testing being at the bottom, and then you throw static at the bottom of this. Because in theory, you would catch more bugs at that bottom area because it's quicker and easier to run those tests. So unit tests run really quickly as opposed to end-to-end tests. Your static tests or static catching in TypeScript is as you're writing code. So it's even before you run an automated test. So yeah, I think that's a really cool addition to this idea of testing. And going back to the conference I was at, which was KCDC, a now really good friend of mine, Becca, who runs Virtual Coffee. I got to hang out with her a lot. I went to both of her talks. One of them was on Cypress, which is for end-to-end testing.
Oh, awesome.
Which is really, really neat. I really have liked everything I've seen about Cypress. But she referenced Kent C. Dodds as well, because he's like the testing guru. And she referenced the fact that he often talks about, he feels like his tests basically give him 1,000 versions of him. There's 1,000 Kent C. Dodds out there that are just like testing his code. And she had a slide up that references quote, and then had like 100 pictures of Kent C. Dodds on her slide. And I tweeted about it and he replied to it and laughed. But I thought it was really funny. Just another Kent C. Dodds connection in terms of testing.
Yeah. And I guess just to tie all that together for anybody that's new to testing. One, I have a video on YouTube that kind of has an introduction to testing. So I'll include a link for that in the show notes. But unit tests are when you're just testing a small unit. You're trying to see how that piece works as a tiny piece by itself, standalone. Integration test is the next level, and that's just seeing how do these components talk to each other and work together. How are they integrated? That's being the keyword. And then end-to-end tests how everything works together as a whole. And so in general, the reason that we're talking about end-to-end testing is so important is because at the end of the day, that's how your user uses the site. Your user doesn't care so much about an individual button as they do, how does the button work on the page? Does the right thing get triggered when I click on the button? And so the end-to-end tests are probably the most important, but at least the static tests, the ones that we're talking about with the type checking, that's just one step there that will get you to where you want to be with a minimal amount of friction. Before we move on from static tests, the other piece that I do want to mention is linting. So linting is not stuff that you find in the laundry. It is...
I'm sorry. Can we pause and laugh at that and keep this in the final recording, please?
Oh, man.
You're on a roll.
Jokes with Amy.
We should totally have a side segment called Jokes with Amy.
I don't know how funny they'll be.
It's so funny enough.
So with linting, maybe you've heard of ESLint or StyleLint. And what that does is it is going to check your code to see if you're applying like a style guide to your code. So are you using two spaces or four spaces? Are you writing your functions with arrow functions or const or a named function? And so that helps a lot because if you're working with somebody else, you're not overwriting each other's styles. But it will also catch a lot of the things, just like TypeScript. It serves in that static testing category of getting you a lot without you having to technically write tests.
And inside of VS Code, ESLint, the plugin, it'll do a really good job of highlighting with the red squigglies or yellow squigglies, depending on how you have this defined, your like warnings or errors using linting. And just a quick reference for this, I have now taken over the JQQ meme project that you started on your GitHub.
Yes.
And so it's on mine. I've been having a lot of fun with that. And one of the things that I notice, and I haven't really set this up much myself, but you've got ESLint configured in there, which I think pulls down some base configurations from WestBoss.
That's right.
And there are like 100 different configurations or something. But I'm seeing it call me out for things that I have not been called out for in terms of like best practices. And I think it's cool because I do all these small demos. I don't write production code anymore. I feel like I need somebody to look over my shoulder and tell me, hey, maybe that's not the best way to do that. Like, it's kind of annoying because it slows you down, but it also just gives you some structure and you can go in and customize it and change it if you don't agree. But I think that has been cool to work with so far.
ESLint's made me a better developer for sure, mm-hmm. for that exact reason, because it will make those recommendations. But the reason that I added it was because we were working on that project at the same time and mm-hmm. you would style something a certain way and then I go in and style it a different way. And then you look at the commits and they get history and it looks like you would change the entire file, which is not true. You only changed a few things, but because my linting and my styling was slightly different, there was a discrepancy there. And so linting, especially when you're working with somebody else, will keep you both in line so you're using the same patterns.
You heard it here, folks. Amy had to put in rules because of the way I was writing code. No, but it is.
I'm the hippie, remember?
Yes, you are a hippie. You're a hippie with strong opinions on code. No, it is like especially helpful in the case that you're working with two different people. And one of the things I actually want to chat with you about sometimes specifically is understanding when and where and how to configure Prettier and ESLint and not have them overlap. Because I think the issue was when I would work on code, my Prettier is just global in VS Code and it would automatically take over versus you had ESLint or you didn't have ESLint at the time. So it was formatting stuff differently. Not that I was intentionally doing it, just because I had Prettier happen automatically.
Yeah. So I can actually give a quick answer to that for anybody that's listening. I was living in that Prettier ESLint mm-hmm. discrepancy hell where they're both conflicting with each other. And part of the reason why I used Wes Boss's configuration is because he has a Git repository called No Sweat ESLint. I'll include a link in the show notes. But he talks about how to set that up so they're not in conflict with each other. That's been part of the reason why I've leaned on his configuration, was because I felt like they were always conflicting with each other.
Mm. Okay. And I think there's some details in VS Code of you should turn off Prettier when you're using ESLint, or at least this was like the suggestion a few years ago. So I just need to make sure. I basically want to have every project automatically configure with Prettier unless I specify something else.
You can get the two to work with each other. It's just a matter of how you set that within your configuration. So okay. I think the solution for me ended up being turning off Prettier as an extension in VS Code, but then adding it as like an ESLint configuration. So it's like I still have okay. Prettier running, but it defers to ESLint for styling.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I need to make sure that I get that taken care of.
Let me take a brief moment and talk about one of our sponsors. Vercel will meet all of your hosting needs, and we're actually hosting the compress.fm site and my personal site, selfteach.me, on Vercel. They also power more well-known sites like Twilio, but you can use them for e-commerce, travel, news, and marketing sites. You name it, they can host it. When I got ready to launch the compressed site, it was super easy. I pointed it to the GitHub repository and told it what folder my next.js project was in, and then it just worked. Ridiculous, right? But they also power over 30 plus Jamstack frameworks, including Create React App, Next, Nuxt, Vue, Ember, Svelte, Angular, Hugo, and Gatsby, just to name a few. But one of my favorite features is when you set up your account, you get your own dashboard. And here you can invite other team members to collaborate or view analytics. So as soon as I push the code to my GitHub repository, it deploys that code and I can watch the build and its entire process through their custom dashboard. So be sure to check out Vercel. I'll include a link in the show notes, but special thanks to Vercel for being a Compress.fm sponsor.
Speaking of VS Code, first of all, VS Code is awesome. We all spend a ton of time in VS Code. And interesting note here is that VS Code uses a lot of TypeScript behind the scenes that you may not even realize. So one of the specific examples is if you're just writing vanilla JavaScript and you do document dot, and then you see all these function calls and properties and things that pop up in IntelliSense and VS Code. I don't know if people have really paused to wonder where that comes from. Well, it actually comes from TypeScript typings behind the scenes. So it's not like a project that's necessarily written in TypeScript. It's just the actual typings themselves, which define what are these functions, what parameters, what types of parameters do they take, what do they return, and so on. And that's where a VS Code actually gets that IntelliSense. So a lot of open source projects, again, even if they're not necessarily written completely in TypeScript, if they include the TypeScript typings, that gives people who use that library the ability to see, if I take this object and do dot, now I see the functions and properties and things that I have access to reference or call, and I know exactly what types of data they are. So that sort of stuff is really, really helpful. And I guess it's not really like any shocker. Microsoft is behind TypeScript. Microsoft is also behind VS Code. Obviously, they're going to make these things work really well together. But that integration and that IntelliSense from TypeScript typings inside of VS Code, and again, going back to ESLint, all the integration is really tight and neat and helps you quickly understand what the code is that you're working with and what sort of data types is needed in the different spots that you're writing code.
Yeah. When I had TypeScript added to the project, I wasn't having to type as much because autocomplete was 1,000 times more helpful.
So, Amy, if you were to get started with TypeScript, where would you get started? What sort of documentation or references or things would you look at?
Yeah, I think some of it depends on your starting point. So, for example, the very first project that I added TypeScript to, I was adding it to a Next.js project, and they actually have documentation to help you get started. So if you're just starting with Next.js, that's where I would start. And the thing to also note is that you don't have to add TypeScript to your entire project. You don't have to convert the entire project over. You can sprinkle in TypeScript. You just want to make sure that there's a mode within the configuration file called strict. And so you just want to make sure that strict is turned off. And then you can continue to use your JavaScript and then just sprinkle in TypeScript as you want it or as you're able to convert files over. If you turn strict onto true or turn it on, then it'll throw more errors trying to make sure that you're typing absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm. And the cool thing, like you mentioned Next.js as a starting point, all the other frameworks that we mentioned as well, like TypeScript is becoming so popular that all of them have relatively simple configuration and pieces of documentation to either add TypeScript to an existing project or some sort of config flag to set up a project from scratch with TypeScript. And I think what you were saying with using TypeScript in conjunction with JavaScript, you're saying if you already have a JavaScript project and you're looking to migrate to TypeScript, it's not a all things go at one time, but you can kind of piece that together eventually by doing just convert this one file to TypeScript. And I think that usually involves setting up your configuration and also changing that file's extension to either TS or TSX to represent a TypeScript file. And then you can keep the other ones as regular JavaScript.
That's right. So you will put TSX if that file has JSX in it. Otherwise, you can just use a plain TS file. So that's the difference there.
Okay. I didn't know that. So that JSX specifically being now in the React world.
That's right.
Cool.
But then from there, I'd also just install a TypeScript linter, and I can include a few links to those in the show notes. But as we were talking about before, the benefit to having that linting is that it will tell you what things need to change. And so I've really just allowed the linter to teach me TypeScript and figuring out what things I need to type. The cool part is TypeScript will actually infer a lot from your code. So if I mentioned 42 in quotes versus 42 the number earlier, if I have 42 in quotes, TypeScript automatically knows that that's a string. Mm-hmm. Or if I have 42 with no quotes, it automatically knows that that's a number. Or if I have true or false, it automatically knows that that's a Boolean. So I don't necessarily have to be implicit with those types. TypeScript is smart enough to figure that out. So the linter will tell you which pieces you need to help TypeScript understand to be able to do its job.
Yeah. And another example of that, I mentioned this earlier. If you have a function that is defined and it returns a specific type, so you actually define what type of data it's returning. So you say it's returning a string, and then you assign that to a variable. If you don't define what type that variable should be in the exact same way, now TypeScript will look at what does this function return? Well, it returns a string, so this variable should be a string as well. So you get a lot of this implicit help from just TypeScript in general to give you those bumper lanes to keep you on the right track and give you some structure to the code that you write.
Yes, I thought it might be helpful if we talk about some of the different types specifically. And just to also say this, TypeScript can go pretty deep, but there's two different types of TypeScript users. There's just the basic TypeScript user, and then there's like the library author TypeScript user. So library TypeScript author is going to try and account for every single version or variation of content that someone might have to input. So their stuff is going to be a whole lot more complicated. If you're just doing a basic web app, you can actually get TypeScript up and running a whole lot easier than you probably think with just using these basic types. So we've listed out a few of them. We talked about a string. So that's just going to be like a word, text. It's going to be in quotes. You can have a number, which is exactly what you think it is. It's a number. It can be any number.
Tell me more.
Oh, man. My kids have been watching Number Blocks on Netflix lately. And so I just had a bunch of Number Block songs go through my head. Nice. You said, tell me more.
Can you sing one for us?
Oh, no. I'll include a link though for anybody
to you singing it or to the video.
Netflix if for you, sure.
All right, if we get 1,000 likes on some Twitter post or something,
oh yeah, perfect.
Amy will sing. I'm volunteering.
Oh, hilarious. There's an array and an object, and these are just things that I feel like people that write JavaScript already know. There's a Boolean, but then some of the more complicated things that you might not think of immediately when you think of types are enum, but you probably use an enum. So if I was setting up a user and I wanted to say that a user could have different roles, so they could be an admin, a user, or maybe someone that just has access to the backend, a member. So that's three different roles. The value that I assign is only going to be those three different strings. So an enum would say, these are the strings that you have access to, and it will limit that. So monkey is not going to be a role that a person could be.
Depends on who you're working with, first of all.
Hippie.
Yeah, hippie is definitely the role a role hippie. That, yes. You're going to forever be known as a hippie for no reason other than I randomly said it. So I've also specifically created my own enums in JavaScript by creating an object. Let's say it was like role options is the enum, or I guess just roles is fine. If I create that and create an object for it, then the properties would be the name of the role, like the key, and then the value would be basically the same thing, but just inside of a string, or if it's some other data type, that's okay. And so if I want to reference that, I would reference roles, which is the object, and then dot. And then those options that get populated are the options for what the equivalent of an enum is. So an enum is confusing, I think, for a lot of people, especially in JavaScript, because it's not something we've specifically seen, but it's really just limiting what the different options are. You're saying for roles, it can only be these four options that you can choose from. You can create that with a vanilla JavaScript object in vanilla JavaScript, as I just said. In TypeScript, it's even easier and more explicit to use an enum.
So a tuple, this one was strange to me because we actually use a pairing software at work called Tuple. But what this is it's an array with specific values. So for example, if I was going to return a user with an age, it looks kind of like an array syntax, but the user's name might be in quotes. That would be a string, Amy. And then the age would be my age as a number. And so a tuple says these are the values that I'm going to return with these specific types. And again, for all of these, we can include examples within the show notes. For me, I'm a visual learner and I need to see it to completely understand what I'm looking at. Union is another type. And basically that's just saying that for this person, you can either give their name or their age. And that counts as the identifier for that. So I can give you a string or a number and either value is okay. So union is combining two different types.
Yep. And this is similar to the unions in Figma, because you have the ability to do unions there where you take two different items and you're basically combining them to create one.
That's right.
And the one maybe most special type that we haven't touched on yet in TypeScript is the magical any type. And as you might expect, any means that variable could be of any type. And this is usually a catch-all in TypeScript if you really don't know exactly what you want this data to look like, or you don't feel like defining what that data should look like yet, you might just throw an any on there and you can treat it like anything else and write vanilla JavaScript. So it's usually an out. I just want to move past this thing if you're using an any. So a lot of times people early on will use any so they don't have to write as many types and things like that. But I feel like the more you use TypeScript and the more sophisticated you get in integrating it into your project, you will probably and probably should see less and less use of any.
Yeah. And I should also mention, if you have that strict mode turned on, it won't allow you to use any. They want you to define as much as possible. So I would just say, as you're defining these types, just keep it simple. And then a lot of these things that you think are more complex that you would need to reach for any, a lot of these libraries have types that you can pull from. So for example, if you're working with React, there's a special type that they've created that allows you to say, hey, this is a React node. So I'm not having to say, I have no idea what it's going to return. It's returning a React node, and it will give you the definition to be able to do that. Same with a JSX element. You can say this is JSX that you're getting back. There's libraries there to help you define what those more complex pieces are.
Awesome. And our next section is taking it to the next level. And the first couple of bullet points you have are types and interfaces. And this is something I'm not comfortable with the definition, so I'm going to let you talk about this.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot. I think most people have questions on the differences in types and interfaces. And I think really quickly at surface level, I think they have such small differences that you're probably okay using either for most of what you're doing. That said, I will let Amy jump in for more details.
That's right. Most people will tell you to pick one and you'll be a type person or an interface person and just run with it. But there is a slight difference. And actually, if you just look at the documentation, it says that in most cases, you can choose between them freely. So that comes straight out of the documentation. But the biggest difference is that an interface will allow you to extend it. So for example, I used this the other day when I was creating a sidebar element. My React component had a heading for the sidebar, and then it had a list of links. And I had another variation of that sidebar that I wanted to use on a different page, except on the other page, I had social media links. So I extended the original definition of what a sidebar is to include the option to add social media links. And so I wouldn't have had that option within a type because I would have had to basically rewrite everything. So just a little less typing with TypeScript.
Puns all the way around.
I know. The syntax for both of these looks a little bit different. So for a type, it looks maybe a little bit closer to what you're seeing with an object syntax. So you might say type person equals curly brackets. And then you'd say first name colon in quotes Amy comma last name and then in quotes Dutton. Whereas an interface, you don't need that equals. It just says interface person curly brackets. And then actually at the end of both lines, you have a semicolon. So first name colon Amy semicolon. So it looks a little bit different. And maybe the only thing else worth mentioning with types is that they're a little bit more constrained, obviously, because you can't extend them. But they can also be used with union.
And now it's time to take a second to talk about one of our sponsors, which is Dado CMS. Dado CMS is a complete and performant headless CMS built to offer the best developer experience and user friendliness in the market. One of the things I think is really interesting and neat on their website is if you hover on their Why Dado CMS tab in the nav bar, you see sections for developers, digital marketers, and content creators. So it's got the entire audience covered. They also provide a rich CDN-powered GraphQL API with real-time updates, which is really neat. So all of you who love working with GraphQL and are looking for something that has real-time updates, this is really, really cool. They also provide a super flexible way to handle dynamic layouts and structured content, and then have best-in-class image and video support with progressive image loading out of the box. So if you're looking for a headless CMS that can help represent every member of your team, make sure to check out Dado CMS.
So if you're wanting to get on the TypeScript bandwagon, what are some resources or places that you can turn to get up and running? We already mentioned ESLint. James also has a video on YouTube called React and TypeScript Getting Started. So we'll include a link to that in the show notes. Definitely check that out. Scott Talinsky has a couple of TypeScript courses on level up tutorials. There's one for beginner TypeScript and then one that is React specific. So I've gone through both of those. And then if you're a reader versus a video watcher, Smashing Magazine has a PDF or hard copy book you can purchase called TypeScript in 50 Lessons that goes pretty deep.
And there's a couple that I've added on here as well. I just real time saw Amy fix a typo in my notes.
I'm your TypeScript person.
Yeah. Amy is my TypeScript. Or Amy is ESLint. She just follows behind me and fixes all of my errors. But there's the TypeScript transpiler at typescriptlang.org/play. And what that allows you to do is enter in TypeScript, and it will show you what the transpiled version of that is in JavaScript. That gives you a good idea of what goes on behind the scenes, what the output of it is. There's another article that I was just kind of looking at before we recorded. It's When Should I Use TypeScript on the Free Codecamp blog. So we'll have a link to that one as well. One of the things they mentioned was, and I haven't verified this or looked into it, but they mentioned the readability of the outputted JavaScript was more readable than some other tools that did similar things. So they seem to think that was a benefit, that if you looked at like the source maps and things or the outputted JavaScript, that it would make a little bit more sense than some of the other options. All right, cool. So there's some resources for people to get started with TypeScript. Now we're going to move into, I think, our favorite section, which is our grab bag section, where we take questions from friends and strangers alike on the internet. One of them, I think we've already covered. So there's a question from Alvar Lagerlof on Twitter, who was looking for a clear answer on when to use types versus interfaces. So he specified clear. If that wasn't clear, feel free to follow up and ask his questions on Twitter after the fact. And then we've also got one from our friend James Perkins, who asks, when is it appropriate, in your opinion, to use TypeScript versus when not to? Some people use it nonstop. Others, like myself, use it based upon size and complexity. Amy, do you have any thoughts on that one?
I don't have an opinion of what project you should add it or not to. I've kind of recently jumped on the TypeScript bandwagon and gotten really excited about it and wanted to put it on everything. I don't feel like that's the right answer. For example, I have a giant project I just added it to and felt like I coded myself in a hole because I didn't have as much experience behind it. And you kind of go through this wave. I don't know if you've seen online. It's this curve of learning. It's this, oh, I'm super excited about this. I'm going to apply it to everything, to this like pit of despair of why did I do this? You know, what am I doing with my life? I don't know if I even like TypeScript. And then you kind of come out on top and level up. But I think, you know, some of that is also acknowledging that learning curve and figuring out the best way to learn is actually to apply it to a project. And so if there's opportunities to do that, the more projects that you apply it to, the better you'll learn it and become more comfortable with it. What are your thoughts on that, James?
Yeah. I think a couple of things that make sense to use it. I do think bigger projects definitely make sense. It's ideal if you're starting from scratch with TypeScript, just because it's more difficult to migrate a bigger project to TypeScript. Part of that is not only just a bigger project, but if you're working with other people as well. Like if it's just me working on a project, I know all the code because I've written all the code. But if you're working on a team that everyone hasn't written all the code and hasn't touched all the code, having those bumper lanes, those types defined is actually really helpful for people. So I think at scale, TypeScript helps give you that structure. It's really nice. I think it's really hard to justify setting up TypeScript in a smaller project, especially if it's not something you use all the time. So if you're not like intimately familiar with TypeScript and you then go to throw it into a smaller project or start a smaller project with it, it's probably more overhead to get started than it's worth. Again, these are smaller examples. And if you're not the person who's intimately familiar with TypeScript, it may give you a little bit more trouble than it's worth. So I think those are a few things that I look out for. Another one that I think just combination-wise works really well is if you're working with GraphQL. So one of the benefits of GraphQL is giving you that strong typing on the back end for your data. If you can map that to TypeScript types on your front end to work with, I think that's just kind of a natural complement that works really well. So that's something that I would keep in mind as well.
I should have said that earlier. I felt like one of the reasons why it was easier for me to pick up TypeScript was because I have experience with GraphQL and a lot of the same principles transfer. Like even the syntax, it looked very familiar. So it made that transition a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they definitely have a ton in common there. Another question, which is similar but a little bit different, is from Dr. Tech on Twitter. And they ask, when is it a good idea to migrate a React project to TypeScript?
I think it kind of goes in line with what you were just saying. When you have a larger project where you're not touching everything all the time, TypeScript is only going to help your coworkers or with a bigger project put those bumper lanes in place. It's always easier to put TypeScript in place from the beginning versus trying to implement it on the back end. But again, the benefit with TypeScript is you don't have to apply it to the entire project. You can put it in strict off mode and just sprinkle it in as you want it or need it.
Yeah. And I think that's the key to when do I migrate. A couple of things to look out for. Are you having issues? Like some of the things we talk about of being at scale and working with teams, are you having stories from people on your team of saying, I don't know what the hell this code does, or I don't know what this data is. I don't know what it returns. As you see more of those questions pop up, that's a pretty big indicator that we need more structure. We need something to add on top of this. So that's something to keep in mind. Again, just if you have the ability as you're starting a new project and you know that it's going to grow and be relatively big and there's going to be lots of people working on it, that's something to potentially do that beforehand. Obviously, like you said, doing it from the beginning is more ideal, but it doesn't stop you from doing it midway through. And you can do it file by file. You can do it multiple files at a time. I love that you can slowly integrate TypeScript into a JavaScript project. Now, the one thing I will add, and I've seen this specifically at FedEx and in other places of adopting new methodologies and technologies and things. I think if you're going to move to TypeScript, especially on a project with other people at work, I think you really have to be bought in that that's what you're going to do. Because of the fact that you can write just regular vanilla JavaScript and it will still count, that means if people aren't really bought into TypeScript, they're going to write all their stuff in regular JavaScript and you're not going to get the overall project benefits that you would if you were using TypeScript all the way across. So I think it has to be one of those things where if you're going to go that route with a work project, your team has to really fully on board because you start to really not get the value that you would if you don't. All right, there's a question from Gerard Hines on Twitter as well. And they ask, if you had to choose between going deeper on React or learning TypeScript, which would you recommend?
I'd probably say go deeper on React before learning TypeScript, because I think that's going to get you a little bit further. TypeScript is just bumper guards. It's, as we've talked about, it's just a superset of JavaScript, whereas learning more React is going to allow you to increase your functionality of your application.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I'll give a slightly different take depending on what you're looking to get out of it. And I think I read this question wrong, Gerard, if you're listening to this after the fact, when I responded to you on Twitter. I said to continue with React as well for basically the same reasons that Amy just mentioned. But I was thinking you were asking if you already knew React and TypeScript, which would you invest more time in? And I said React. I do think there's so many things on resumes and for job applications that are buzzwords that are not hard to learn. You could very easily pick up TypeScript on the job. That's not something I would be worried about as a hiring manager. But a lot of people that are hiring are looking for that buzzword to already be in your resume. So if it's not already there, you might miss out on job opportunities that someone else who did use TypeScript would. So I would say work with TypeScript just enough to get it on your resume so that you have that buzzword filled, and then go invest and continue to invest deeper into React. It's just one of those things you have to kind of play the game for getting jobs and doing interviews and stuff. So I would love for people to have that buzzword added to their resume. Not that they use it every day, not that it's the thing that they know the best, but it's just a word that's there to kind of cover them so that they open themselves up to more opportunities.
I can just imagine somebody putting any on everything and saying, I know TypeScript.
Yes. Well, so you laugh, and here's a little anecdote. When we upgraded to Angular like 4 and then 5, 6, 7, 8 at FedEx, honestly, we didn't write TypeScript. Like, we just really didn't. And I look back at that, and again, that's a cultural thing. That probably would have been my responsibility as the person who had the most web experience to push for that. And we did some, but so much of it was either not defining types or using any. And again, because of that, I think we missed out on some of that structure and some of the overall benefits that you get with TypeScript because we didn't fully invest.
And then our last grab bag question comes from Matthias on Twitter, and he had a few parts to his question. We've already addressed some of the parts in previous questions or throughout the episode. So I'm just going to jump down to one specific part of his question where he said TypeScript typing or through JS Docs. So JS Docs is an alternative. There's been several people that I've seen either on Twitter or different places online where they have given up on TypeScript and they're moving to JS Docs. And that's just a official way of documenting your code in comments. But they've said that you can get a lot of the same benefits of TypeScript without the headaches. So James, what do you think about JS Docs as an alternative?
Well, first of all, I'll start by saying I've never actually used JS Docs. I know the basics. So a lot of what that comes from is defining your return types and parameters in comments above your functions. And as far as I know, I don't think you have the ability to like reuse those things, like whatever those types are that you reference in those comments. I don't think you have the ability to reuse those in other places. I don't know that that's true. You could give it a try, like especially if other people are using JS Docs and think they get most of the benefits. I think if you really want to invest, and especially if you really want to invest as a team, I think going all the way in on TypeScript is probably more beneficial just to get you into that mindset and have all the different benefits that come along with it.
Yeah, I think as you mentioned, James, one of the things about TypeScript is you can define a global file that has all of your types listed in it. A lot of times you'll see that with an extension .d, .ts, and that D stands for definitions. And then anytime you reference that particular type or that particular component with that type, throughout your project, you just reference your global file, and so you don't have to type everything out literally again. Thank you for all the submissions. And if the grab bag part of the episode is not your favorite, then picks and plugs might very well be. So this is one of my favorite sections. I always learn about fun stuff from James. So we will usually pick something that we like and plug something that we have been working on. So James, do you have any picks and plugs for us?
Yeah, I am going to pick something that Amy turned me on to and told me I should buy when I debated about it. The Apple AirPod Pros. So I have the regular Apple AirPods and I've really liked them. Occasionally, it does some dumb things where when I get a call and I'm already listening to my AirPods, it goes to my phone instead of the AirPods and I have to switch it, which is really annoying. But they were on sale at Costco the other day. I've been wanting to try them. I'd heard Amy talk about them and love them, and I bought them. And they're fine for regular headphones, but the killer thing is the noise canceling. And I never thought noise canceling would be a big deal for me, but it like sucks the volume out of the world. Like the world is gone when I turn on noise canceling. And this is especially great on airplanes because I get like headaches when I wear over-ear headphones. So if I'm just wearing regular Apple headphones, I have a really hard time hearing music or videos or whatever I'm listening to on a plane because of how loud it is outside. So these, like, it shut all that out and made it so easy to hear. And there's a pass-through setting where you can basically amplify the outside noise into your ear so that you're more aware of what's going on, which is what I did when I was waiting at my gate to see when we were boarding so I could hear what was going on. So those have been just really, really nice. If people are debating between the two, in my opinion, I think going for the Apple AirPod Pros is definitely worth it. And I am going to plug two communities that I don't run myself, although I think they're great. So one is the Code Connector group. It's a Slack. It's various meetups throughout the week. It's a support system. It's run by amazing people. It's one of the best communities that I have ever been a part of. So Code Connector, you can find more details at codeconnector.io, and you can find links to Slack and their meetup, etc. And there's also Virtual Coffee. And I mentioned Becca earlier on in this episode, who I got to hang out with and meet at KCDC. And she runs Virtual Coffee, which is similar. They have a Slack. They have regular sessions throughout the week. They have a podcast. They are working on some exciting stuff for Hacktoberfest. So anyway, Virtual Coffee is another amazing community that you can find out more information at virtualcoffee.io. So Amy, do you have your picks and plugs ready?
I do. This week, I'm going to pick an app called POCK app, and that's POCK. So if you are on a Mac, it's only available on a Mac, but I have a MacBook Pro with a touch bar, and I like the touch bar in the sense that I think it looks cool, but it's pretty pointless other than that. Mm-hmm. I hate the fact that I don't have a tactile escape key, but that's besides the point. Anyways, this app actually makes that bar a little bit more useful and a little bit more purposeful. So you can control the things that you put on your touch bar. So I can add the dock, which is kind of fun. And you can also add the weather. You can add the weather. And if you're playing music, it'll display the song. Or if you're playing something in your browser, it'll display what you're playing in the browser right there within your touch bar, which is kind of nice. For my plug this week, I'm going to plug a project that James and I are working on together called Advent of JS and Advent of CSS. So this is a project that we are working on together where during the month of December, for every day leading up to the 25th, we'll be dropping a CSS challenge and or a JavaScript challenge. So all the challenges are free, and then you can pay for the code and solutions. So if you go to adventofjs.com or adventofcss.com, you can buy them individually or as a bundle.
Nice. In the next episode, we are going to get back to talking about design and specifically about small design changes that you can make in your applications that also make really big differences. So I'm looking forward to that. This one, I think, will be more Amy-led, and I will be soaking in all of the design knowledge. But in the meantime, that's all we got.